Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
The Coaches Network, bringing the game together.
When I say it was like Coach Carter, I've never seen anything like it in my life. I turned up and it was full of all the kids that hadn't got into any other college in the area.
Hey guys, you're now listening to the Coaches Network podcast, a podcast aimed at anyone who's passionate about athlete, talent and personal development. My name's Coach Yas and I'm a UEFA A-licensed football coach developer and content creator. I'll be sitting down with a range of guests to discuss their journeys, their life lessons, and how you can make an impact. Enjoy. Right, guys, welcome back to another episode of the Coaches Network. Today, I've got a special guest with me. My guest today is Ross Embleton, currently the head coach at Leyton Orient. Morning, Ross. How are you? Afternoon.
I'm really good, thank you. I'm really pleased to be on. Listen a lot to the work that you do, and really enjoy the fact that you've invited me on. So, thanks for having me.
Thank you for being with us. Ross, you know, just to kind of get us started, for those that maybe aren't familiar with you and maybe your journey, would you mind just telling us a little about what you do now and we'll kind of pick it apart from there?
Yeah, obviously, right now I'm currently head coach of Leyton Orient. I've been in the position literally just over a year, about a year and a month pretty much, on a permanent basis. I was part in that role two or three times, really, on an interim level, whether that be after managers had moved on in previous times, whether when we lost Justin Edinburgh when he passed away. Off the back of some managerial changes, I've taken a role on a short-term basis. Before that, very proud of the fact that I've sort of come through a grassroots academy background until I stepped into full-time football at Swindon Town. But I started as a young coach at Leyton Orient as well in the football and the community programme, which was something that I loved doing, continue to love doing, still working with young kids and that when I would get the opportunity to do so. And then into academy football. So I've worked at Leyton Orient. I managed what was a centre of excellence at the time rather than what everyone knows it as these days. Went on to roles at Tottenham, AFC Bournemouth, Norwich, and then, like I say, stepped into the professional game at first team level.
Fantastic. And I just want to take you right back to the top of that. You know, you said there about having to come through almost a grassroots type environment, not necessarily being an ex-pro or anything like that yourself. Just take me back to right at the start of that journey. You know, what was it about coaching that kind of caught your eye? I mean, probably similar to myself and a lot of other people. You've probably gone into coaching because maybe it just wasn't a career on the cards as a player.
to a degree. I think we all live that life, don't we? And we all hope that we're going to get that opportunity. But in hindsight, really, quite quickly, I learned that I wasn't going to be at the level that it took. But I think the thing for me was the innocence, from my perspective, the innocence of going into coaching. There was no plan. There never really has been, to be honest, in terms of, right, I'm going to reach this level or I'm going to do this qualification or this is the end goal of what I want to be and what I want to do. It was always quite innocent. I went into it at about 15, 16, so I was still at school and I got told I wasn't getting a scholarship, YTS at Leyton Orient. And my dad had always been into coaching. And he said to me, got a few mates who run Saturday morning football clubs. And literally, it was Saturday morning football clubs. I would turn up. We never really knew how many kids we would get. I'd tie shoelaces. I'd help them have their drink. I'd pick them up when they were crying, help them when it was freezing cold. And my objective was to be there to make them have a good time. I suppose if you ever look at it from a business model, if you like, it was to bring them back and keep paying their £1.50 or whatever it was for the hour and a half. But really, it was about me going and enjoying working with the kids, and it was about trying to make it as enjoyable as possible. And I think that the thing that I'm probably one of the things I'm most proud of is that that's what I've tried to do ever since. it's become more of a plan. It's become more structured. It's become more thought about as I've gone through it. But I've always lived my life along the lines of, you know, my work life, certainly. It provide an enjoyable atmosphere for people. They're going to enjoy doing it. They're going to get better at doing it. And they're going to want to come back. And so far, it's not done too bad, you know. So I think, I'd say very innocent in the way that it started out, but very, very enjoyable from my perspective.
No, that's brilliant to hear. And I kind of want to take you back to that. You're speaking about a process, a journey there, and, you know, taking back to your journey. Could you mind just giving us maybe a bit of a timeline as to where we're at on that, just so we can kind of build a picture?
Yeah, so I was, like I say, 15, 16, leaving school. My school were really good. So obviously now in terms of academy footballs, a lot of professional clubs are obviously linked to schools in terms of their players going to the same school, bay release, those sorts of, you know, patterns that follow through being within an academy now. And at the time, Arsenal were heavily linked into my school. So we had the likes of David Bentley, Jermaine Pennant, Graham Stack, Jay Boffred, people like that all came into my school and did their education, whether that was their GCSEs or if they were youth team players coming in. And because I got released so late as a young player, my school sort of come to me and said, look, we know you like coaching. We know you're into your coaching. Why don't you do a similar program to the Arsenal boys? But when they go in to train every day, you can utilize that time to go and develop yourself as a coach. It wasn't much of, I don't mean there was a great plan behind it. It sounds a little bit more thought about than it probably was, but I think it was more my school, my sixth form, trying to help me because I got sort of caught off guard a little bit. So over that 2-year period, I was really lucky. Again, without knowing it, without thinking about it being a plan. When I look back now, the experiences I got in that 2-year period, because my time at college was quite limited, a couple of days a week, probably not full days, even then. So as a community program, Leighton Orient could always pick the phone up and go, you know what, Ross is available to go to this housing estate and put on a coaching session, to go to this college, to go into after school clubs, primary schools, half-term football camps, all of those sort of things. I was flexible enough to be able to say, yeah, go on, I'll go and do it. Obviously what goes hand in that was, it was a nice, you know, a nice bit of cash to get me through college as well. But I was without knowing it, I must stress that because it wasn't a plan. Without knowing it, I was getting so many different experiences. So I was turning up on a housing estate in Barking, not knowing if I was going to get any players coming. And then when they turned up, whether or not it was going to be a safe environment or a tough environment, the types of lads, types of girls, types of kids that we were going to be getting. And then I was going to a nice leafy primary school in Chigwell, you know, working with different kids, 30 kids on my own, having to put on a session that they were going to enjoy and come back to the week later. And then I think outside that as well, learning about coaching on, you know, on a different scale in terms of, you know, crowd control sometimes, you know, 20, 30 kids all in one little space, limited equipment, limited footballs. I look back now and I think to myself, like, I can almost feel like I can think of a session on the spot, you know, because of those experiences. So like I say, that sort of, when I say got me through college, I want that to be, I want to make much more of a deal out of it than just that loose phrase, but it certainly did. But I came out of that a lot more educated as a young coach without actually realizing the experiences I was picking up. And then, at the back end of those years, really, once I sort of started to leave sixth form, I started to really commit to going and watching the Centre of Excellence Academy at the time to pick up on watching good people coach, you know. So one of my, you'd call him a mentor now, but he was my coach that released me and someone that I spoke to about coaching, which again, like I say, it's not a plan, there's not a word to support it, but we would class him as a mentor now, was Chris Ramsey. So I used to spend a lot of time watching people like him. I would go and watch my dad coach. I would go to the Leighton Orient Centre of Excellence and watch different people working with different age groups. And again, no financial gain from it, but it was about going and trying to pick up as many different experiences as I possibly could. So that was a big, big chunk of my life and my early stages of coaching. And then Shortly after, I suppose, like say leaving college, I went into managing the primary schools program. So what fitted into that was like half-term soccer schools, the tournaments. We used to run a big tournament program for all schools, which was for kids of like year four, year five, year six, boys, girls, mixed tournaments. And I sort of managed and pulled all of that together for the local primary schools in Waltham Forest. So that was invaluable because I then went from not just being the guy who turned up with a bag of footballs in the playground, but you know, building relationships with school teachers, with headmasters, headmistresses, you know, putting together a plan and a program to deliver in the primary school. So something that, I'll be honest, I had no idea of doing, you know. I'm not sure you'd put someone in charge of my level of experience, but the enthusiasm and the love that I had for coaching obviously shone through in terms of showing those people how keen I was to make sure that I put on the best program that I could for Leighton Orient, but for their school and their kids. And I stuck at that for a good 5-6 years. And I, amongst other things of working in the academy as an age group coach, it was all based around Leighton Orient. It was all based around real variations of programs to give me different experiences and be around different people, different characters and different levels of coaching. And then I was very, very fortunate, I suppose, a bit of a sliding doors moment really, was that it was at the sort of time where major Premier League funding was coming into the game and helping to manage youth development at the smaller clubs. And the club, Orient's funding was expiring at the end of that season, and I didn't really know whether or not it was going to carry on and what the input was going to be. And the guy that was in charge of the Centre of Excellence at the time moved on to a new role, and it was a bit of a vacant position. So for 6 months, amongst my other job, I had a bit of a job share of my job and the running of the Centre of Excellence for a 6-month period. So just to get it over the line and get it to the end of that season. And yeah, by the time that came around, the funding got approved and the job become permanent. And fortunately for me, I was only 25, but I went into the role and became head of the Centre of Excellence, head of youth at Leighton Orient. So it was a massive eye-opener, but something that I look back on in terms of, you know, learning some management styles and techniques that, albeit I was in the deep end, was something that's proved to be incredibly invaluable for me.
Definitely. And you touched on a few things there. I want to take you right back to the start. You obviously, you know, showing up on the, you know, the local council estates and working in the local estates and not knowing what it was going to be, not knowing whether you were going to get, again, numbers-wise, you probably didn't know what was happening. Ability-wise, you probably didn't know what was happening. Whether it was going to even be safe for you to even get out the estate at that point.
Yeah, yeah.
Probably another thing to consider. But, you know, you talk about that and then you move into the idea of moving into a role where you didn't maybe feel that you were overly prepared or ready for it, where you're now having to build different types of relationship with schools, head teachers and the rest of them. And just kind of finish on what you just said there as well around the idea of, you know, it really taught you a lot about different management styles and I guess those, the ways in which you can go about developing and maintaining some of those relationships. So I guess, you know, two questions I kind of got from you from there was, one, what would you say is the biggest piece that you kind of took away from obviously having to go through that experience and before obviously eventually ending up with the Centre of Excellence role? And two, how would you say that's, I guess, changed your perception on what coaching should look like? Because obviously, you know, going into it as a young coach, relying on maybe, you know, the experiences of the coaches that you've worked or played under potentially, or worked alongside at that stage, possibly your father, and obviously you touched on Chris Ramsey there as well. Outside of those experiences, obviously getting thrown in the deep end, I think, you know, for any coach or anyone listening to this, I would say there's always that battle. Do you go for a job when you're ready for it, or do you go for the opportunity because it's there?
No, and I think my life a little bit in football has been a little bit like that, of do you go for a job because it's there, or do you go for a job because you're quite ready for it? And I think I certainly, when I went into that head of youth development role, I wasn't ready for it. I wasn't prepared for having to be. I've always backed myself in terms of my enthusiasm, my ability to work with different people, my energy to put on good coaching sessions. but I never really understood how important it was to have to try to manage people a lot older than me. You know, like we referred to there about talking and doing business with a head teacher. That didn't quite prepare me for going to work every day and having to manage certain people that were very experienced in the game, had been at the club for a very, very long time, had built incredible relationships with the hierarchy at the club. And then I went in with my own ideas and initiatives, and I had to learn how to do it. One of the people I had to manage was my dad. You know, he was a part-time member of staff here, and I come in, all of a sudden I was in charge and responsible for him and what I wanted. So I think the biggest thing that I would have would take from that experience would be that his flexibility to embrace what's out there. You know, the big evident thing that always jumps out at me is I would go onto those housing estates and sometimes petrified to go and put on a coaching session with some of the characters that were coming on there. But then I soon realized that I could build relationships with them in a completely different way than I would the five-year-old kid that came to my Saturday morning soccer camp, went to the primary school that I coached in, and then came and played football with me at half term. It took a different skill set in order to embrace and create that relationship. But I soon found out that I could do it. Do you know what I mean? So then when I went into that environment of managing those senior people and those people with a real experience, that were looking at me as a little bit of a snotty-nosed little kid coming into that environment, I knew I had to puff my chest out and back myself. There was a lot of people, direct football people, that certainly would have questioned me because of my lack of playing background, my lack of experience, which, again, I'd support that. You know, I was 25 years old. Who said that I was ready to do it? I found myself in a very fortunate position to take up the role and threw myself into it and dedicated myself to doing it properly. So I think the big part of that was managing having the flexibility to deal with different people. You know, all of a sudden I was sitting down with parents and talking to them about their kids' future, and I was half the age of some of those parents. Do you know what I mean? So it was a very difficult experience for everybody to embrace, but I embraced it and I was flexible enough to try to build tips. You said something there in the second half of that question. Sorry, I forgot.
Yeah, it was just more around the idea of, you know, building those relationships and that experience that you've got from doing that. You're not necessarily going to be ready for the role itself. But you know, kind of just off the back of what you've just said there, though, you know, you use that word experience there. And a lot of the experience that you've talked about are quite, you know, informal things. And I think it can't go amiss how important those informal experiences are. And it just to highlight that, you know, some of the things that you do go through your journey are something that a qualification can never teach you.
100%. And they're not related to the industry that we all think we're related to. That's, I say that all the time now when I'm here. So a good chunk of my staff are people that have never worked and never played, had a football career. And then a good chunk of my staff are people that have. And I think that balance really helped me. And so those ones who have had a career will tell me things sometimes about a player might feel this, or as a player I liked this, I didn't like that. And I won't always go with that opinion, but it gives me a player's opinion that I can't give or I can't have. But I think the thing that I always say to them is I feel like I've come into this game from the outside, from what people would class as the real world. And I think when you talk about some of those experiences, those qualities that you feel like you have to take into a management role, whether you are the head of an accountancy firm or you're a football manager, I think those skills transfer. And I think that's something that in this game we can feel a little bit like this all has all the answers. Everything's about football. It's do what football's always done and not necessarily about embracing. I think we're becoming better at it, but I think sometimes it's about those human qualities that transfer across any industry or any business, not just about what suits football.
Definitely. You know, you talked there earlier and you mentioned that it was this probably around age 25, 26, or what, we're going back maybe about 15 years?
Yeah, just over there, yeah.
You know, already at that stage, the argument would be you've already considerable about an amount of experience at 25, 26, having kind of started when you was in college. So what, you've got maybe about 10 years under your belt almost already.
Yeah. which again, lucky, like, really, because if I'd gone and, you know, got a scholarship or YTS or whatever it was classed as at the time, I'd have come out of that 2 years later with different, you know, with a different, on a different time scale. And so it got, really got me ahead of the game. Again, like, so without it being, I don't want it to sound like anyone thinks I had a plan. It wasn't, it just sort of, it developed and snowballed toward in a certain direction. I was very fortunate by that age to have had that experience under my belt.
100%. Just on there, you're talking about not really having a plan. It's something you've referred to a few times throughout the conversation already. And I was curious, whilst there might be wasn't a plan, was there a necessary direction or an end goal in sight for you or a target of some sort?
Not really. I always remember when I went into the Centre of Excellence role, I won't throw him under the bus by using his name, but I remember a guy involved in the club at the time said to me, coming in to work with the youth, like, obviously that's probably where you're going to get to as a young coach that hasn't played. And I remember thinking, oh, like, I wouldn't mind proving you wrong. He wasn't mugging me off or patting me on the head. I think it was probably just his general opinion, and probably at the time, a lot of people's opinions, and probably now, there's probably people out there still that are probably still saying the same thing, that you only have a certain level that you want to reach. So I think I've always had a belief in my own ability and a desire to want to prove those people wrong that have set that bar for me. But I think what I really had in my mind always is always just to try and be the best that I possibly can. And it can sound a little bit cringy, a little bit cliche, but I think that's where I've always wanted to get to. I've always gone into, not that I've done every job that I've ever had fantastically well, I haven't, but when I've been in them, I've always wanted to try to be the best that I can be. And I think that if you have that aim, that target, that desire to be the best that you possibly can, at the end of it, you're not going to fall too far short, or, you know, your strengths and weaknesses in relation to that role might cause a barrier, might set a limit for you. But it is about trying to embrace everything as much as you possibly can to try and come better. And like I say, I've had roles, I'm sure we'll come on to them, but I've had roles certainly in my football career where I look back and I think, I wasn't great. I wasn't suited to that job. Circumstances found me in that role, and I didn't achieve what I or the people that I were working for probably wanted. But it was always really just about getting better and better and better. And then you find within the particular roles you're in, you know, opportunities arise, and you know, people always use the phrase of it's who you know and et cetera. I think sometimes you create that for yourself. People know they can trust you if people know that they're getting someone who's hard working and willing to want to do the job to the very best of their ability. I think you sort of create your own luck in terms of, you know, them wanting to employ you and have you around them. So, like I say, certainly never sort of set out as I am going to be an under-18s coach, or definitely not setting out to be a head coach. That only arose in recent times. So the answer to your question is it wasn't a sort of set destination I wanted to get to.
And you touched on there, you know, the idea of it, the first team position obviously arising quite recently, well, within the last year or so. But you've had a few stints as the interim coach within the first team environment there. Now, 15 years on, you're age 39, if I'm not mistaken.
39, yeah.
How's that journey gone from, right, I've just stepped in, I'm Ross Ebbleton, I'm now leading the development centre or the centre of excellence, to now first team coach? Talk us through that.
It's interesting because I left Orient because I felt I'd got to a stage. I'd been centre of excellence manager for 3 years, and it was only me. In the old days, it was only me and the youth team manager, youth team physio, that were full time at the club.
As well, there, Ross, I just want to get a bit more of a picture there. So, in terms of qualifications and what, where are we? What are we looking at this stage?
So it's interesting. So part of the criteria to be a centre of excellence manager at the time was to be working towards your A licence.
Right.
So I went to Lillishall and did my A licence going back 14 years ago now. So I was 25, 26, and if I'm honest, I was nowhere near ready. I went there on year one and I was so out of my depth. Not because I didn't know what people were talking about or anything like that, but actual delivery of the A licence at that time, I wasn't ready for it. But back then it's a structured, I'm actually redoing my A license now, and partly because of the experience I had doing the A license before, but back then it was you go away for 2 weeks to Lillishall, have a year, then go back again for another 2 weeks and final assessment, fail, pass.
Did you finish it at that time and pass?
Yeah. So I went through, I failed it originally and then had to go reassessment, etc. But what was very evident to me then was how far away in terms of delivering at that level I was. Because, like I say, for me, I'd never really had the experience of doing it, and did the qualification because of the job I had an opportunity to come and do, not necessarily because I really wanted to or felt ready to do it, you know?
Yeah, 100%. And I think it's a very interesting point, because there's a lot of, since the ECCC's come in, for instance, there's a lot of maybe people similar to that, in that they're not necessarily going down the A-license route because it's something that they specifically want for themselves, but more because the job that they're in mandates it as part of the requirements of the ECCC. So I guess it's interesting to hear you said, and I think, you know, I'm really interested to know maybe your thought process behind actually going and doing the qualification again, because a lot of people probably would have just said, do you know what, I've been doing this for a number of years, forget that, I'm going to try and move on to the pro license. So, you know, I commend that, and I want to tap into that a little bit.
I think the first thing was that, and I mean this in the nicest possible way when I say it, that when I did the A license originally, Dick Bate was on there, and even on your podcast, I've heard the amount of different people that praised Dick. Dick was fantastic. His delivery was incredible. But the way that the courses were structured then were different, you know, and I always remember that the flexibility in comparison to now is mind-blowing. The individual opinions now of a coach and a person are embraced, and I think that's something that I wanted to experience. So I've done my youth awards in the last 5, 6, 7 years, whatever it's been, and I've really enjoyed them, and I've pretty much enjoyed all of the courses that I've done, but I didn't really enjoy the A-license that I've done originally. One, because I was at my depth, but secondly, the it was very rigid, the course back then. So I always remember on day one, there was a Portuguese guy who could speak very limited English. We did the first 11v11 session. The goalie gave him the ball. He passed it to me, and I passed it back to him. And whoever was taking the session whistled, stopped, and said, first pass has got to be the most direct one. Put it in behind the opposition. And the Portuguese guy looked at me as if to go, what? Like, no, like, we pass it. And like I say, it's not me slagging it off. It's each to their own. And it was the structure of the course. But I look back on that as like, because I was trying to fight for my life on the course, and then the limited input, I wanted to experience that again. So I felt like getting to where I am now, that the pro license is obviously something that I want to do. I want to do the management diploma that's run by the LMA. Definitely want to embrace all of those courses, but I'm really excited by the fact that the A license had changed so much. Mm. Obviously, we're doing it all on Zoom at the moment, so we're not even going on the course. We've not been to St. George's Park. We don't even get together as a group. I think before lockdown, I've had 2 visits from my coach educator and that sort of thing, in terms of the support days and that sort of thing. And the shared learning, the different opinions, everybody's input is absolutely fantastic. So I sit on a Zoom call once a week with 8 or 9 other people, and the conversations are fantastic. They're brilliant for me, selfishly, because it's not me sitting around with my staff who are talking about the way that we played or should play at the weekend. It's all other people's inputs. And I think what I'm seeing from the original course that I did to the one that I'm doing now, he's so much more inclusive of what people think, and not just exactly what you should be told in terms of the way that you go to deliver. Does that make sense?
That makes complete sense. And, you know, it's a conversation I have with a lot of coaches all the time around the way the pathway is changing. You know, I consider myself to some extent quite fortunate in the ways that I came through my level one, my level two, my B license old style, and then did the new A license, I've done the advanced youth award and the rest of the stuff, and had kind of the what I consider maybe the best of both worlds in that respect.
Yeah.
because I've got some of that grounding, that technical stuff that they really, really wanted to focus on in the, I guess, the older style of the coach education pathway. Whereas now it is a lot more, right, what do you think? What do you think is important, but based on where you're working, which I think is really important. Now, my only, and I guess you're probably in a perfect position to answer it, really, is do you not find that with the, and I guess at A license, probably slightly differently, because you'd expect the coaches to have a certain level of technical understanding, albeit I don't think that's always the case. But do you not find that then there's a bit too, it's swung a bit too much in the other direction, in that it's allowing too many opportunities for coaches to turn around and maybe neglect the technical aspect of the game and say, well, I'm not going to work on the technical aspect because of X, Y, Z. But and that's great, but they actually, if you look back at the heart of everything, it's still technical. It's just technical at its base in terms of what the game demands and needs from the coaches, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does make a lot of sense. And I think like on my course, mine's a PFA course. So I'm on it with a lot of ex-footballers. And it's really good because they've obviously either still playing or coming out of the game with a real good knowledge and understanding of how to play it, but not coaching. There's one or two people in there that are, but they're not directly delivering and coaching week in, week out. So I think that's where the beauty has been for, I can only speak for the group that I'm in, that there's quite a good balance of what makes it up. And I think, like I say, because we're not gone to St. George's Park and the course has been delivered, you know, to us, It's become a lot more interactive. And I think underneath what you're saying, I think he's right. I think it's very, very easy for people to, we've had a couple of younger boys through our academy train with us, not necessarily recently, but throughout the season. And when they come in, it's like, yeah, look, when we trained with the first team or when we watched the first team train, it's all about the game. And of course, it's about the game because we've got to try and win on Saturday. And I think you're spot on. It's about them being able to strip it back. And I think all I can talk about is the tutors and the assessors that are on my course. They strip it back extremely well. So we talk about 4-3-3 against 3-5-2, or, you know, if you played with inverted wingers, how would you defend against all of those sorts of things? But at the same time, it is about those tutors do strip it back to talk to you about, you know, what is important about developing the individual. How do you, you know, focus on the fact that your team are going to hit diags? Well, you know, have you got the players with the technical attributes to be able to hit those types of passes, to dribble, to, you know, whatever the particular attribute is that you're discussing at the time? So I think it's very much dependent on the type of people that are stripping it back and bringing it back to the basics of coaching and the basics of the game, which I think you have to be very, very careful that, you know, we can go and do all the qualifications as quickly as we possibly can, but there is a layer that is about layering it up and understanding what develops players to the level to be able to go and deliver and perform in coaching sessions that are based around the team and a licensed level, if I'm explaining that well enough.
Yeah, definitely. I think you made some great points there. I guess, you know, from your own opinion, then, you know, if you had to sum it up, what would you say the major pros and cons of maybe the old style and the new style then?
I think the old style certainly gave you incredible amount of structure to the way that you coached. I think it kept the reins on the session in terms of, you know, you built it up. There was a process to building it up right from the very beginning of, you know, if we are playing out from the back, this is how you influence the goalkeeper, the back four, the midfielder, you know, almost like a process to the way that you delivered throughout the team. And I think that's excellent in terms of being able to get control and order on the way that you work. I think what the flexibility gives you now is the manner in which you do that. If it suits my team to say, right, yeah, when we're playing out from the back, I want to work with the front players first because we're going to pass it to the centre half and smash it down the line, for argument's sake. They're the players I want to influence first. You know, it allows you to go to the key areas on the pitch. If you want to set up to press and you don't want to acknowledge what the fullbacks are doing until the very, very end of the session, don't influence the fullbacks. But as long as you do, do you know what I mean? So the freedom to be able to go and deliver it is a lot more relaxed and dependent on the individual. I think what you do have to be able to demonstrate is that you can do it, is that you can get there, that you can show that you can influence everyone, and you can deliver a session that's worthy of influencing players, units, and a team in an 11v11 environment.
I think that's got some great points, and I think like it is about demonstrating your I guess more your understanding of how it links into the game, rather than right, I'm actually specifically going to work on this today, but actually being able to say, right, although I'm not focusing on this, this is how it links in.
Yeah, and do you know what, Yas, as well, what I found really interesting was we were doing a topic on like the mid-block the other week, and, you know, I'm not one for using the phrases and words that are on the courses. It's not the way I work.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? But each to their own, and I understand why they're in place. Don't get me wrong. Again, it's not me palming them off in any way, shape or form. But we were doing a session the other day on the mid-block, and I said, in my mid-block, what if I say in my 4-3-3 that I don't want my front three players involved in the mid-block? Mm. And they were like, well, why? And I said, well, because when we win it back, I want to get it to my front three and I think they can create chances to score.
Yeah.
And they were like, well, if you think that works for you, then set it up and go and do it. And I thought that was really refreshing. And that showed me how, when I say how far it come, I'm not taking away from the old A lessons, but how much more I felt it suited me and the way that I like to coach, because that might be different to you saying, do you know what? Get everyone back behind the ball. We're going to defend with 11 men behind and try and counterattack another way. And I thought that was a really key moment and element for me from my tutors to be able to say what, you know, justify it to us. And as long as you can justify it, show that why, how you would do it, then there's rationale behind it.
Do you know what? I think it's a great point, and it's, you know, something that I've been working with over the last few years. So, you know, last couple of years, I've been supporting with county FAs and delivering some of the courses for them. And the one key takeaway message I try and leave everyone with, if you take anything away from these courses, you learn anything, it's really get a grips of the principles of play. Yeah. If you get the grips of the principles, how they present themselves, that's up to you. As long as you understand those principles, you should be in a good space to justify any of the stuff that you're doing. And if you can't justify yourself to yourself in relation to those principles, then you're probably not on the right track.
Exactly. And that's what makes it a game that we all love, isn't it? If we all 100%. Wanted to do it the same way, it'd be boring, wouldn't it? So 100%. I think the fact that people go out and they like 4-4-2 rather than 3-5-2, that in itself brings you a different angle to the way that you approach things. So to be able to enable people to deliver that way as well, I think it's really refreshing.
100%. I kind of just want to move things on a little bit, you know, to come back to your journey now. You've got, we kind of went off in talking about your qualifications there, but take you back to that centre of excellence. You know, you've moved away from the centre of excellence after 3 years. Where did you go from there?
So I left Orient because I felt that I'd got to a point where it was just me in youth development full-time, centre of excellence. I'd been on the early youth awards. I tried to introduce a few things, the way we played, the work we did with what we all know now as a foundation phase in terms of the development of the players that were coming through. And the great thing I had at Leyton Orient was that all the kids in the system, by the time I left from the age of 8 to the age of 18, I'd worked with them all because of, you know, where we'd recruited our players from in the local community, development centres, and then working as a young coach. Coming up, I'd worked with all of those players, but I felt like I'd started to get to a point where I wasn't really coming up with anything new, and I wasn't tested, pushed, because it was all on my terms. And if I wanted to say, right, we're going to play three at the back the whole way through the academy now, there wasn't really anyone here to stop me or to question me as to why. So I started to get itchy feet a little bit and felt that it was probably the time for the club and for me to move on. It needed some new energy here in terms of the venues we were using and that sort of thing. So I was really fortunate that at the time a job came up at Tottenham. It was a dual role, and it pretty much covered my whole career in terms of what I'd already done. And it was to work with the primary age groups at the academy. So it was before it, just as EPPP was starting to be discussed, but I worked with the primary age groups and coaches at the academy, and then managed the development centre programme. And what we put together was like a development programme for the coaches as well as the players that were working in those centres. So we had, obviously, like a lot of people would know, centres scattered all over London. where we tried to recruit the best young players in those centres and in those areas. And we obviously had coaches that worked within those centres. And my role really was to identify, to educate, to work with the coaches that were coming through the foundation into the development centres with, I suppose, the long-term goal to end up at the academy if that was the route that they were taking. Similar to it would how it would work for a young boy at 7 or 8 years old going into that process as a player. So quite simple, but the concept was very, very good in terms of developing our own, I suppose.
So just on that then, you know, talking about the range of roles that you did, obviously, whilst at Leyton Orient initially, and obviously now with Spurs, what were some of the key things that you kind of developed and understood about the way it, or what it took to maybe manage different individuals and just leadership in general?
Yeah, I think it became a bit different role for me in terms of, I said, I stepped into the Orient one with all coaches that were very senior, a lot older than me. This one sort of ended up being a bit of a reverse. I was only in my early 30s, but I had the touching 30, but I had the opportunity to go in and work with young aspiring coaches that were, you know, that were new, that were just, some of them just setting out on their new experiences. The other side of it was some people, we had a very set philosophy at Tottenham, set by Chris Ramsey, John McDermott, Alex Inglethorpe, where we worked on very specific individual-based techniques. So there was a lot of very set sessions, delivery that went throughout the club. So that was new because I come in and they knew it better than I did. So it was really interesting to have to embrace that. And then the real thing that I found of real benefit was the different types of characters that it took to put into certain centres in certain areas. So we had, for argument's sake, we had one development centre in Chiswick. Lovely area, nice place, lovely kids. You could tell there was a development centre on because of all the lovely cars that were in the car park on the nights that we were training there. But then we had one in Tottenham, we had one in Walthamstow, we had one south of the river, one in Tooting and Mitcham. So it was then about trying to identify, have we got Tottenham coaches that are capable of going in and doing those sessions? And if not, how do we recruit coaches capable of delivering the philosophy, the techniques that we want in order to come in and work on them? And it was very individual based, as I said. It was very much about the individual player's techniques. So we didn't want someone coming in who was going to do straight line passing drills or, you know, get everyone playing two touch. In actual fact, it was a total opposite. It was about it creating playground environment. It was about giving the kids the freedom to express themselves. It was about encouraging players to stay on the ball, get on the ball, be brave on the ball. So then it took a certain quality and a certain open-mindedness of the coach coming in to be able to identify if they were going to be the right ones to work for Tottenham in that environment.
So kind of just on that then, you know, interesting to kind of maybe pick on is, what were maybe the fundamentals for your own coaching philosophy? How did that align itself with the clubs that you had worked with? Did you ever find yourself, obviously I know you touched on the first part with Leyton Orient, you got to a point where you kind of just called the shots a little bit. And I can totally relate to that because, you know, in a previous role of mine where I felt like I'm at the point where now I'm making all the decisions, there's not really much for me to learn because the people around me are kind of, they're not really challenging me. They're just going with whatever I say, and if they're not doing that, then, you know, the old saying goes, it's never the smart thing to be the smartest one in the room.
Do you know what I mean? And I'd also become Ross Embleton at Leyton Orient. Like, I was just Ross at Leyton Orient. Do you know what I mean? All the parents knew me, the kids knew me. So like I said there, I strongly believe the best thing for Leyton Orient to a degree was me coming away, because the whole club was just what I, you know, was when I say was me, I make myself sound more important than I was. But what I mean is I was that person that everyone associated with youth development and kids coming through there. So I think it was important that the kids and the parents and the club had a new lease of life in terms of a new refreshed approach on that front. I think what was really important for me, and probably what got...
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
I mean, the job to a degree was that when I went to meet John McDermott, John was at the time working with the head of the foundation, which was a guy called Grant Cornwell. And Grant had been the person really at the community program at Leighton Orient that started my coaching journey, as you referred to it as, but gave me my first opportunity coaching in primary school. So he knew what I was about as a person. But when I sat down with John, and it was just John and I, first time I'd ever met him, I spoke to him about passionately about summer birthdays, late developers, and developing individual players. And I think that was, I learned incredible amounts about how Tottenham did that, the way they delivered, the size of the pitches, the environment that they created for those young players, the techniques that Chris Ramsey had drilled into the coaches to continuously home in on. I learned so much about when I went into the door. But I think probably what gave me the foot up and the opportunity to get the role over anybody else that went for it was the fact that I was very interested in the fact of not just signing the here and now as an under nine, about trying to find, you know, the little summer baby, the hidden gem. You know, we recruited so many of our players at Leighton Orient from primary schools that never ever played for in organised Sunday club football because didn't have access to it or didn't have the financial support to do it. We got them from their primary schools. And I think those initiatives that I'd tried to put in on a smaller scale at Leighton Orient were things that, I know that once I got in the door, the club as a whole was something that Tottenham were really trying to drive.
And so, you know, you've gone to Tottenham there. Talk us through, how long was you there for and where did that go next?
So I was there for 3 years and it was incredible. So I got everything that I wanted out of going to Tottenham. I enjoyed the job. I loved the job. Worked with some really good people, learned an incredible amount about youth development. But what I really craved was the opportunity. And I went into work with people like Perry Suckling, you know, as good as there is in terms of developing players, but developing and working with goalkeepers. Alex Inglethorpe. I knew Alex because he played at Leighton Orient, coached at Leighton Orient for a little while, but an incredible way of working with people, with young players, certainly young players in the sort of 16 to 18, 19 bracket.
Yeah.
Chris Ramsey, an absolute genius in what he does, can create a session with a group of 10 kids that will benefit every one of those kids and their position and the techniques that they need to work. So an incredible coach and loved the way that Chris worked and I had a very good relationship with Chris before I went in there. But like I say, and John McDermott obviously as the head of that environment, some fantastic people to go and work with. But I worked there for 3 years and I got to a point where I was learning and learning and learning, but never coaching. It sounds incredible, but I wasn't delivering myself. And I really missed it.
Why was that?
I think because I was so hell bent on the development of the coaches that I was working with. It was so set in terms of giving people the airtime to deliver and develop themselves.
He's a servant leader.
Yeah, and then all of a sudden I looked around and I thought, I ain't done a session. It was crazy. And I just become the guy that filled in when so and so couldn't turn up. And simply sat down, I had an appraisal, I sat down with John McDermott and he was complimentary of the job that we'd been doing. But I said to him, I really need to coach. I just want, and he was honest and said to me, I don't see you as a coach. And I said, well, you're not going to because I don't coach. So yeah. It's like a vicious circle. So the appraisal was good, but I came out the other side of it thinking, I'm not sure if longer term, this is where I'm going to want to be because I miss the thing I love doing the most.
Just at that stage then, come back to the question I asked earlier, do you start to have a clearer idea of which direction you're going then?
I knew I wanted to deliver. And that was probably the most that I thought. If John had said to me, right, under 14's day release on a Thursday, take the lead the session, take the day, set the day, work with Brian Klug working with us, who's at Ipswich now, but work with Brian all day on a Thursday, that'd have been enough for me. I'd have been fine because I really enjoyed the job. Great club, great people.
Could you not have asked for that opportunity?
Yeah, no, and that was what I think what I was requesting, really. But again, like I say, in John's defence, he saw me doing the job I was doing, was obviously pleased with it and didn't want to evolve that because he probably felt he had the expertise there already and would have looked at me and why would he see me as a potential coach if I wasn't coaching? So I knew that I wanted to to deliver. So I didn't really do a great deal. We always had people coming into Tottenham to watch training, to see what we did, to see how we worked. And I was fortunate at the time that we had three or four different people come in. Some people from America spoke to me about some work out there, and it wasn't really the right thing for me with a young family. And then I was really lucky that I got a call from Sean Brooks, who had gone from being head of the academy at Bournemouth to assistant manager, and they pretty much offered me the opportunity to go down to Bournemouth and take the under-18s.
And that would have been obviously a great opportunity for you at the time to kind of move from what you were doing to now moving into a coaching role, but more specifically working with the PDB role. What was that like? And, you know, and I guess within that stage there, have you started to maybe start to, firstly, how long did that role last? What were the biggest things you took away from it? And did that start to maybe formulate your passion and drive to maybe want to move into first team football then?
The answer to your question would be that it didn't float my thing to wanting to go to first team football. I was very lucky that when I went down there, the people that were in charge of the first team embraced me, including me in a lot of the conversations they were having. We were based at split site, so it was unfortunate that I wasn't be able to work on the pitch next to them to see exactly how they were working, but they really included me in a hell of a lot. What it did for me and my coaching was, for the first time properly, we were training on another site away from the first team, and my goalkeepers used to train with the first team every day. So I had no goalkeepers ever for training, and it developed my coaching to be able to get outcomes, real life scenarios, sessions to suit a team and a group of players, which is what I was starting to have to develop without having a goalkeeper in it, which sounds crazy, but incredible. And then when I did get them, sometimes I'd stand there and think, oh my God, what am I going to do today? I've got goalkeepers. It was crazy how it influenced. But bigger than that, it was the first time that I really, really honed in on individual player development. So we're talking over 10, 11 years ago now that I was down there. And I still speak to a good third of my squad that I was working with down there. It was new for me. I went to working in Bournemouth, having spent my whole coaching life working with inner city kids, tenacious, you know, you took the energy, enthusiasm, bit between your teeth, rugged attitudes and types of kids for granted. And I got down there, like, lovely kids, but, you know, types of kids that had all been going to soccer schools from the age of five, all had lovely techniques, but that had that little bit of oomph missing from them because of where they'd grown up. Not their fault. But then all of a sudden, I had to try to find that, recreate that, understand that they didn't have that. They were going to learn it. And then, but that was the first time really that I really started to home in on the individual position specifics, individual player development. So extras after training, trying to create an environment where they wanted to do the work. It weren't just me going, right, go and practice your crossing. So we had to drip that in slowly after training to enable them to understand what it is they needed to learn, how to go and practice it. And then for me and the other coaches that were around to be able to put it on and make it happen.
Sure. And obviously now, you know, you're moving from, I guess, centre of excellence to more of a coach development role and back into the coaching space now. Did you feel like you was a bit more in your element there?
Oh, without that. I loved it. I mean, Bournemouth's a beautiful place anyway. I loved it. It was tough because the environment we worked in as the youth team was a bit not great, but it was about trying to embrace it. And the fact that I was doing a job, coaching every day, good players, like, I was like a kid in a candy, do you know what I mean? I had everything that I wanted to go and do with it. It was about trying to then bring that to life with the kids. So, yeah, I loved everything about it. It was, like I say, it wasn't the most glamorous circumstances and settings that we worked in every day, but we made the best of it.
No, that's brilliant. And obviously, you know, so from there, you know, you've moved from Bournemouth and now you eventually, just to kind of paint a picture again, what year are we in now?
Right. So we are 2013. So that ended up being the hardest part of my career so far, really, in terms of I'd been there for 8 months. Well, I'd been there for four and a half months, and the management situation changed. It was when they brought Eddie Howe and Jason Tindall back from Burnley. And we obviously all know the history with that one. But they both came back in, and there became a bit of a power struggle at the top end of the club. And the people that actually took me down there ended up taking my job. So okay. I'd moved house. I had a young family. Yeah. I was loving my job, loving where I lived. And then one day I turned up for work and they told me it was all over. So I only lasted a year, and it hurt, to be honest. It hurt on a financial level. It hurt on the fact that I loved the job. And it hurt the fact that it was the first time I'd ever experienced this cutthroat industry that everyone kept talking about, you know, and the fact it was quite harsh because I hadn't done much wrong. So I had to uproot and move back this way.
Right. And obviously, you know, it's part of that, you know, you're talking about something that is a reality of the industry that we do work in. One of the harsh realities, unfortunately. So, I mean, you say it was obviously a difficult time for you. Would you say that was probably the biggest challenge of your coaching journey so far? And, you know, if so, how were you maybe, you know, how did you go about dealing with it? Obviously, it must have been very difficult in the first place.
Yeah.
To kind of get that news, it must have been quite shocking as well. But then having to deal with the move back and everything else.
You know, like, we're so used to picking up our newspaper. We're not anymore, are we? But we're so used to reading something about someone losing their job in football and that they've all walked away with millions of quid. And they're not really that fast. You know what I mean? It's only your pride that's damaged. Well, I can tell you that for one thing is that weren't the case for me. You know, that was the biggest thing for me, was looking over my shoulder, worrying about, you know, paying my mortgage, having two young kids and a missus down in Bournemouth, as much as we loved it. You know, the pain of having to move away from somewhere that you was really enjoying living become secondary, because it was about, how am I going to find a job? I remember going, I was working in a school for a little while down there while we were waiting to find out when we could sell our house. And I remember going in one morning and there was a lady, older lady in the canteen, and she got talking to me and said to me about what had happened at Bournemouth. And she said to me, pretty hard down here, isn't it? She said, because as soon as you look behind you, all there is sea. And I started laughing, and she was like, no, what I'm trying to say is, she went, when you're in London, you look all around you, there's jobs everywhere. She went, here, you look behind you, you can't go work behind you there because it's just the sea. So you've got limited opportunities. And I remember thinking, oh yeah, like, damn, I didn't think of it like that. So it was hard, it hurt. Your pride's damaged. I was bitter for a long, long time, because I didn't have anything to blame it on. I couldn't go, oh yeah, we lost 7 on the spin, so they sacked me. I couldn't say, oh, I didn't do this, and then they sacked me. I was there, and the chairman chose to bring 2 people that had just been sacked back into my job, and
just on that, gone. Obviously, talking about being bitter, and you know, it's totally understandable. But you know, how does one get over that? And obviously, how long did that process? What did that process look like? Firstly, how long did it take? And when did you kind of, you know, I guess, realize it's one of them things where, you know what, actually, you've done your bit, and you sometimes there's things in life that you can't control. So it's kind of best to kind of, in some ways, detach yourself from the things that you can't control and just keep your eyes on the things that you can, if that makes sense.
Yeah, like the controlling the controllables, isn't it? And I think what I managed to do was, I went through a lot of anxieties. I was unwell, I think, for a while, you know, in terms of trying to get my head around it. And I touched upon earlier that I was, you know, I'm by no means great at all the jobs I've ever been in. I left Bournemouth and went to Norwich, and I went into a recruitment role. And if I'm honest, I took the role because it was the first job that came my way. And I was very thankful that I'd built up a relationship with the people. I'd worked with them, but just knew them from the youth development circuit, if you like, at Norwich, Greg Brout and Ricky Martin, that they offered me the opportunity to take on the recruitment role for the Southeast. And I was terrible at it. I was terrible because I worried and loved football so much that I would go and watch a game of football and think, why is a right back doing that? Why is a striker not holding it up there? Why is he not running in behind? When actually, that weren't my job. My job was to go and watch and find out, right, the boy Yass at left back for Colchester, he's good at this. And you know, mark him and have an opinion on him and learn his name and build up a profile like that. And I didn't. I watched the game too much and worried why they were playing 4-4-2 and why the centre-half weren't stepping in. And I wasn't great at the job. And it was very statistical because of the way that they were working to fit in with EPPP. And it didn't suit me. And I wasn't great. But like I say, the Bournemouth thing ate into that role, that I was very angry at the fact that I had a role that I loved and a role that I felt I was doing quite well with. And it had all been ripped from underneath me. And it ate into that good 2-year period, I think, when I moved back and went into that role that I actually turned up one day and someone had moved on from a role in Norwich and all the staff went to me, so what is what you've been waiting for, a coaching role? And I was like, no, I'm not here to try and have someone else's job. I'm here because this is the job that I'm supposed to be doing. And I was so cocooned in what had gone on before had taken over me that definitely took me a good 18 months, 2 years to try to process the frustration. And I think that's the biggest thing that I realised in the end. It was about me trying to prove them people wrong. Whatever anyone says, when you go through a bad experience like that, you definitely want to stick two fingers up at the people that stitched you up. Don't care what anyone says. I won't have it any other way. But at the same time, it's about then trying to process that frustration, that difficulty, and put it into a context that makes you better.
100%. So I guess on that then, you know, you've gone from Leyton Orient, gone over to Spurs, moved over to Bournemouth, now over at Norwich doing the scouting and recruitment stuff. How do you end up back at Leyton Orient and now in first team environment?
Yeah, so I went after the Norwich experience. I got made redundant, and that was due to relegation. And I went into running a college program. You know, very modern, you know, popular thing now, isn't it? I went into running a 16s to 18s college program for Tottenham Foundation through Epping Forest College. And I remember turning up on my first day. And I'll tell you this, Yass, because this is one of the biggest experiences of my life, let alone coaching. Is I went in and I turned up at Epping Forest on day one. And I thought I was going in to coach a load of kids from The Only Way Is Essex. I thought it's in Chigwell. Yeah. It's going to be like a stroll in the park. And when I turned up on my first day, when I say it was like Coach Carter, I've never seen anything like it in my life. I turned up and it was full of all the kids that hadn't got into any other college in the area.
Right. You
know, 35 kids on the program and it was carnage. There was fights every day. There was people not turning up. We had two teams entering into a league. We couldn't put one out on the pitch. It was such a negative environment. It was incredible. And exactly, anyone that's run those programs will be able to familiarize. But we had kids pulling out knives. We had kids turning up that weren't part of the program, wanting to join in. It was carnage every day. But I'd done it for 18 months. And by the time I left, we had three teams entered into a league. We had 75 kids on the program. And I remember my last day on the program before I left, doing an 11v11 coaching session on a 4-3-3 with the team that we're going to play the next day. And I remember standing back, I'd been wrestling to the floor with kids pulling knives on people. I remember standing back that day I left, nearly in tears, thinking, I cannot believe, one, what I've survived, but two, some of these kids that have come out of it. And like I said, with the Bournemouth program, I still speak... Sorry, mate.
Definitely took him out of Bournemouth, right?
Oh, without doubt. But what it done was, I remember looking back and I still, like I did with the Bournemouth boys now, I still speak to a number of those kids now. Some of them are playing football. Some of them have been in more trouble, but some of them have got jobs, got kids, got young families. And where it came from on that first day to where it ended was mind-blowing, and it was massive for me. But I was very lucky on that programme was at the time... Martin Ling, who had been manager at Leyton Orient when I was here, was doing some support coaching around some of those colleges. And he got involved with mine. And the Swindon Town job came up. He ended up going there as manager. Actually, at the time, the assistant manager was a guy that I'd gone to school with and coached with at Leyton Orient. He was assistant and they took me in as the first team coach. So I went from the Coach Carter experience to League One football in the click of your fingers.
Excellent. And I think, you know, that probably felt for you, like a massive achievement, especially considering what you've been through over the last couple of years. And I probably can only imagine how low a point you might have been mentally. Then, you know, just look at that thing, think, well, I've actually come out the other side. I've gone through the whole coach car experience, almost been killed a few times. And now I'm here coaching in League One. What, you know, that must have been a fascinating experience for you.
Yeah, it was fascinating. It was eye-opening because, you know, the club were struggling at the time. It was down the bottom. And I remember turning up. We won our first game, drew our second game, went away in our third one and got absolutely hammered. And I remember standing there thinking, what have I done? What have I done here? I've come into this environment. I had an easy, like, well, not an easy job, but like, a, you know, an everyday coaching job with the boys that I was working with. And now I've walked in here and, it, you know, we've got the stresses and strains of a completely different kind. But, you know, another eye-opening opportunity to step into and try to embrace and try to make the most of.
100%. And it's interesting, obviously, because you go through these different experiences. And like I said, more often than not, it's sometimes you can never be ready for the opportunity because you don't know what the opportunity is actually going to, you know, consist of. And I say the same for people that, you know, I've got two kids and I've got another one on the way. And people say, oh, but would you know, you know, I'm thinking about having a kid. And well, I have one when I'm ready, when I've ticked this box. I was thinking, listen, mate, no matter what happens,
you ain't ready.
You're going to be ready. That's the reality. So you can have,
that's right.
The fourth one is going to be completely different. So don't worry about getting ready. Just do what you can.
And yeah.
Keep, you know, keep your eyes on the ball and everything else to take care of itself. You just got to kind of be in the moment with it and be present with it. So I think, you know, it's a testament to you that you've actually been able to go through something like that, kind of get a real knockback and then get yourself back up off it. And, you know, I say this to people all the time that if you're too busy focusing on what's happened in the past and you're never really going to see what's going to come around the corner. And it's honestly, things can change, like you said, in a click of the fingers.
Yeah,
you know,
and I think the other thing to be really careful of, yes, as well, is having too much of an eye on what you want to get to at the end, because the opportunities are so limited.
The process, the journey to get there is all the more important. And I honestly can't emphasize enough. If someone told me a year ago, you know, 15th of February last year, that, you know, in a year's time you'll have a podcast with eight or so episodes already released, I'll be like, you lot. No chance. And then one of your episodes is actually going to be with Shaquille O'Neal. Like, I don't know about that one.
Yeah, it's fantastic. Know, though,
it's literally like, you know, once you get in the swing of things, and I think getting yourself involved, and I think one of the things that you come back to, and something that, you know, come back to your experiences at Tottenham, you obviously felt for yourself that actually, yeah, as good as you might have been doing a job in that role, in that environment, it wasn't for you.
No.
Sometimes just because you're good at something doesn't mean you need to pursue that. What you wanted to pursue was the coaching side of it, because, you know, presumably that's what you're passionate about.
Yeah.
You want to work with players, and, you know, and I think it's a testament that you was able to kind of take a step back in what a lot of people would have just coasted by in that role and be like, you know, I'm at Spurs and I'm in a good environment, and, you know, that's one way of doing it. But
exactly, each to their own, and I think that's right. You know, you can get into the thing of I'm driving into a beautiful multi-million-pound training ground every day on a Tottenham tracksuit, which is, for some people, that's enough, but for me, it just didn't quite float my boat in exactly the same way that it did when I left Leyton Orient. I loved my job. I loved the club. I knew that, you know, I was very comfortable in terms of being in that position, but felt like there needed to be more. And that's why I started off by saying to you, sometimes it's not about saying, I want to be this. I talk to a lot of people now. I have young coaches who are doing a degree in, you know, sports science, and I want to be in your position one day. And, brilliant. I hope you do. I really do. But like, get there. Go and get there. But, you know, don't just look at the end all the time, because you the other side of it is, I don't think you can quite enjoy it a bit in between.
100%. And I think it is just enjoying that experience along the way and picking up the bits. That's kind of, I guess, bringing to today. Then, you know, obviously you're now sitting as a first team head coach at Leyton Orient now. Club's gone through a lot of ups and downs over the last few years, in particular. What's that been like? And, you know, what would you say, or maybe, you know, if you had to wrap it up and say some of the biggest differences from your experience of working in, I guess, youth football and coach development, and now obviously, you know, the pressures of dealing with the first team environment as, if you like, you know, the scapegoat of everything.
Yeah, you're the scrutiny. And I think what I've learned, first of all, I haven't learned this first, I didn't, it's not the first thing I learned, but I think one of the biggest things I realise now is that when everything goes right, everything's wonderful at the club. When everything goes wrong, it's all your fault and you're useless. And I think that's something that's very difficult to get used to, and until you're in it, you never really realize how taxing and how straining that can be. I said to you right at the beginning, my plan was to never be a manager or a head coach. It was to be the best that I could be. And I came here and it was my club, and I came back and the club had gone through some real turmoil. And I came in here on the first day. We never even had a bag of footballs. We had 9 registered players that were all under the age of 21, and we had to build a whole new squad. We had no staff. And I'm now sitting here as head coach 4 years later, working with the director of football and the good people at the club, the board, where we've built it up from nothing and back into a comfortable position in League Two. I think the things that I learned, I think this is probably a collective experience of my time as an assistant manager, which a job that I loved. I worked with some really good managers so far. I've worked with one or two that are not quite as good, but that hasn't gone to plan, and that's life. But I think you take from every experience possible. But the massive thing that I learned is it's always about the type of person and the type of character that you are. You're going to come to work every day. No matter what way you embrace it, you are going to upset someone. Because my job is to pick 11 players on a Saturday, then another 7 to sit on the bench. And then if my whole squad's fit, another 5 or 6 that are not even going to get changed. So every day that I come into the environment, whether I pick the team, whether I pick the subs, whether I show the boys exactly what I want from the team tactically at the weekend, I'm going to upset everyone every day. So it is about trying to come in and be the best person you can and treat people properly. And I think, like I say, they're not always going to be happy. You are always going to upset someone. But it is about trying to treat people the best way that you possibly can. And then I think you've got a chance. The job isn't all about being a good coach. I think that's something that in all the jobs that I've ever had, it's not actually whether or not I can put a cone over there and a bib on that one isn't the be all and end all. It's about your interaction. It's about your relationships that you build with people. It's about being flexible. Another word that I've already used on here already, about the flexibility to say, well, my ideal is to play 4-4-2, but I haven't got the players to play that, so I'm going to play 3-5-2, just packing 2 formations out there. And then when you lose a player, whether you sell a player, whether a player gets injured, you're flexible enough to be able to go and deliver your message and get something across that sometimes you don't necessarily believe in. I think that's a massive thing for me is I'm not on social media in terms of interaction and what people really think of me. But whenever someone throws something or a moan or groan, say it again, mate.
It's all good stuff, I'm sure.
Yeah, I'll bet. But I think the thing for me is when if we play a certain formation at the weekend and we don't win, obviously, then I got it wrong. That's the be all and end of what people think. Whereas sometimes I have to be the one to sit back and say, okay, we drew that one, but wasn't that good. And they criticise you for what you did at that game at that weekend, but it might not necessarily be what you want, what you believe in as a philosophy. It's being able to get the best out of the players and the environment that you're working in.
100%, and I think you're just on that. You talked there about, I guess if you're like the internet pundits, the critics, and one of the key things you talked there about, if something doesn't go quite right, ultimately you got it wrong. I'm not sure if that's always the case. I think sometimes you could have got it right, but maybe the people involved in the process, they got it wrong.
Yeah,
you might have had a player that you've got a great strategy or a way of doing something, and they've not fully bought into it. Therefore. Yeah, you can take some blame and say, well, you could have got them to buy into it a little bit more, maybe try to adapt your ways of doing it. But I think it's too easy. And,
but I also think it's the way that the world that we live in. It's the way the world we live in as well. I think the other thing is as well, you're working with human beings. So when you say it's about the relationships that you build or not, you get some wrong, fall out with some people. I've been here as assistant manager for a certain period of time before I became the head coach. So these players that have been here now for 4 years, the same amount of time that I've been here. And as the assistant, I had a very, very close relationship with them. Now, I'm the manager and I don't pick them. And they're looking at me going, hang on a minute. You were fully behind me when you were an assistant. So you make or break some of those relationships and you are dealing with humans. So sometimes your strategy might be right, but someone slips over or loses his man at a corner or someone does something out of the ordinary and smashes the ball in the top corner for the good or the bad. Yeah. You win or you lose. The outcome of that game is all based around that one moment. Whereas it's my job to remove that sometimes and be able to.
I think something that you've said there was, something that was key and right at the top of that was when it's all going well, but when it's all going wrong, it's your fault.
that's the thing,
kind of, you know, I guess it just really sums the whole experience up to an extent. I guess, you know, to kind of, to off the back of that, then, you know, knowing what you know now, 39, still relatively young as a Football League manager in particular, but for a coach of that age to have the amount of experience, the number of years under your belt that you have got, you know, you're close to almost a quarter century in the game now as a coach. What would you say is, you know, if I gave you the opportunity to go and speak to yourself back when you started at YTS and looking at, you know, specialising a bit more in the coaching side of the game, knowing what you know now and all the experience you have had, and I'm sure there's probably some massive messages that you'd want to kind of lend back to yourself, what would be one of the biggest ones?
Build relationships would be the best, the first one for me, with your players, with the people that are surrounding it. You know, with my players at the beginning were 5-year-olds at an after-school club. But mum and dad come and pick them up. And it was my job to embrace mum and dad. Oh, little Johnny was fantastic today. And guess what? They come back the week later. So my boss is happy because they're paying £1.50 the week later. But actually, the main bit is my relationship with that kid and that parent. Yeah. And that goes the same way as it does now with my group of staff that are sitting in the office doing whatever it is that they're doing, probably having the afternoon off. But it's about building those relationships. And I think the biggest one for me is about enjoying the access to as many different experiences as you possibly can. Don't cocoon yourself on the fact that I'm going to be an under-18s coach at Man United. I'm going to manage in the Champions League. Fantastic if that ends up being the outcome. Yeah. But enjoy the ride. Enjoy the experiences. Go and crave all the different experiences, because they're the ones. They're the ones that really, I said it to you there, for all the fantastic things that I've experienced since I've been working in the professional game, all the fantastic experiences I had as an academy coach coming through, one of the biggest ones that sticks out for me forever will always be working with my group of players at Epping Forest College, because it was so unique. And I think if you're not careful, you focus so much on where you want to get to that you miss the bits in between. And they are, whatever way you say it, however tough they can be at certain times, they're experiences that you can look back on and cherish with incredible memories if you're willing to embrace them in that way.
100%. I guess, you know, speaking about all of those memories and all those experiences you have had, you're now first team manager at Leyton Orient. And obviously, I wish you all the successes with that. But where does Ross Embleton go next?
I think the bit that I've continuously stressed, and it is a lot of stress, so the things that I continuously stress to my family, my mum and dad, my brothers, my wife and my kids, is about enjoying the experience. You know, it's an experience that I never thought I'd get. It's an opportunity that I never planned on trying to achieve. So now, one minute, I want to try and make sure that I last as long as I possibly can. And that's at Leyton Orient and beyond, you know, whether that's me here for the next 10 years or 10 years in football management, then that's where I want to strive to get to. But I think what can sometimes happen for someone like me getting this opportunity is you worry too much about what's going to happen in the future and not about what happens now. And I think if you can try and take care of the now, it might well be wrong. Statistics, I think, lend itself to saying that more go wrong than go right. But if you can try to enjoy it while you're doing it and give yourself the opportunity to look after the here and now, do the here and now a bit well, I think the future looks after itself and the opportunities come your way. If you're doing the here and now well enough, in the future, people will either come calling or further down the line, the opportunities will continue to be available.
Now, you kind of touched on, you know, my next question there, really, just kind of build on that. You know, there's a bit of advice for some people to kind of, I guess, think about and ponder over in terms of their own journeys. And, you know, if you had to kind of add another golden nugget to, I guess, the already many that you've put forward in this experience of an interview, what would that be?
To aspiring coaches or just in general?
Both, really. I mean, because, you know, I think the premise of the podcast, whilst we obviously, you know, speaking within the context of football space, really, it's just about, I guess, inspiring everyone and, you know, taking lessons and lessons learned, insights, and I guess, if you like, keys to some successes that people have had just throughout their lives. And even coming back to the whole experience that you had with Bournemouth and having to overcome that challenge and deal with some of the harsh realities of the industry, that in itself, and, you know, I'm sure people can look at that and maybe take something away from that, in that
without doubt. And I think it's about, I think it all stems from being passionate about your job, about what you want to do, about what you love about being in it. You know, your drive might be completely different to mine, albeit we both want to be successful in and around football in some way, shape or form. Your drive will be completely different, but I think it's about being passionate about that. And then, like you say there, about learning from the disappointments. You know, there's so much made of now. You don't reach anything without setbacks. You learn more from defeat than you do winning all the time. I think those circumstances are spot on. When you go through the tough times, you hear a lot of everything happens for a reason. Look to the future, don't look back. All the cliches that people are saying to try and make you feel better, by the way, they're doing it for the right reasons. But I think it's about processing, trying to process those setbacks and disappointing moments the best way that you possibly can, and look at what's important to you and what's going to be important to you and what's going to make you and good in the way that you work, and not let the underhandedness or the ill feeling towards a certain environment, you know, because if you're a manager and you lose 5 games on the spin and you get the sack, you'll always have something to blame it on. But I think it's about trying to process that, but process it in terms of how you can impact it, and you can affect the situation that you find yourself in. I think it's about trying to embrace that as tough as it can be whilst you're living through it. And again, that isn't anything related to football. I think all these things that you and I have discussed here, not that I've had too many jobs outside the football industry, but I think all of them can be related to the wider world and not just what goes on from
100%. From what... I think it's a great point. That it is, you know, something that another word that you use right at the top of this is a lot of the things are transferable.
Yeah,
you know, it is, and that's why, you know, from even the journey of this podcast, I've kind of moved from the football space, which is obviously the industry that me and you work in, but started branching out to, you know, people from different environments, different industries, not just the sports related ones, but even the multiple disciplines beyond it. So, you know, the psychologist, you know,
and that's so important, isn't it, in terms of getting those inputs from different people to try to create this broader knowledge of what people think and how they look at things. I should have said it earlier, but I've only told this story once. But when I got the sack from Swindon, I came back. I'd been living away from my family for, you know, 18 months, really, like a couple of days at home a week. And I came back and I said to my missus, I ain't doing this no more. I can't get in the sack. I can't. So I'm still going to coach. I've set up my own little soccer school that I still do now. I coached a couple of teams in the evening, which I still do now. Not now because lockdown, but I still coach some grassroots teams because I love coaching. Still do it. But at the time, I said to her, do you know what? I'm going to go and say it else. And I had an interview as an estate agent. And I remember sitting down with the guy who was the owner of the estate agents, and him going to me, how do you think you'll be all right dealing with the pressure of what goes on here? And I remember saying, yeah, that'd be fine. But because I felt comfortable to go in and transfer the things that we've been talking about the relationships you build with people. We've talking to, you know, a guy with a couple of million quid to spend on a property and a guy that wants to renovate, you know, a little bed sit. Like, I felt comfortable that I would be able to go and engage in those conversations and sell someone an house if I needed to. And like, it's not me giving it the big one and saying, I can go and do anything. I'm not saying that at all. But I'm saying that the if you're going to go into something that's related to people, or leadership, or, you know, or dealing with human beings, if you've got those traits and those beliefs and those things that I would class as strengths, I think you can definitely transfer them over. Fortunately, from my perspective, Leighton Orient got taken over, and I got a phone call about 3 days before I was about to take the job. But I think, like I said, it just shows you that if you believe in yourself and you've got those strengths, that you can transfer them across to other walks of life.
Definitely. You know, I guess from a final note, as we look to kind of wrap up then, Ross, you know, again, still relatively young in such a long career already. You know, you've spent more than half your life coaching now, really. But
feels like it at the moment, mate.
So, you know, well, I guess not to wish your time away, but when you do kind of eventually, you know, hang your boots up from a coaching perspective, shall we say, or just even just generally, you know, when you've come into contact with someone and you've had an experience with them, or you've built a relationship and that relationship doesn't exist anymore, whether it be because you moved on or they've moved on or whatnot, what's the lasting legacy that you want to kind of have? And, you know, I kind of lend that to the fact that you're not, you know, just by having this conversation, you kind of made yourself part of the coaches network as well. So, you know, what is that kind of message or that legacy that you want to leave behind for those that come across your work?
I would love people to say he's a good guy. I'd love people to say that that he wanted to help me. I think that I want to help myself because I want to be successful and I want my team to win every week and to win leagues and, you know, end up as a top class manager somewhere along the line. But I would love to think that at the end of it all, whether I have been successful or whether this is my only experience of it and I, you know, go on to do something else, that people look back and say, yeah, he was all right. And he helped me. He wanted to make me better. And I think that's the big thing for me now, as I listen to so many different podcasts and different approaches on, you know, what high performance and what sustainability at the very top is. And I agree that it is about sacrifice. It's about, you know, being strong towards people, driving people on. But I'd like to think that people just think you're, you know, I'd like people to look back on, in time, and relationships that I continue to have with people that I've worked with from, you know, all variation of ages, from different walks of life, from different areas, that they think, yeah, he was a good bloke and he made me better.
Fantastic. So, you know, Rosh, just on a final note, you know, it's been a thoroughly enjoyable conversation for you, and hopefully it has been for you, and I haven't called you.
Very much, sir.
You know, if there was any listeners or viewers out there that wanted to kind of learn a bit more about your journey and things that you've been through, or even just to discuss some in a bit more detail, some of the things that we've covered in this conversation. I know that you said you're not much of an interactive person on there, but is there any way they can get in touch with you, possibly go on social media or anything like that?
To be honest, yes, the two people, I think you and I came into contact on LinkedIn. I'm very comfortable on that because I think it's a platform that is, that what it says on the tin, it's a professional platform for professionals. So I'm accessible on there. I think that just comes under my name. That shows you my naivety towards social media. I am on Instagram. It's private, but I am on at Embers81, which is EMBERS81. It's a private account, but if people ever want to send me anything on coaching or in, you know, anything that's not them moaning about the result at the weekend, I'm more than happy to interact with anybody. So, like I say, I'm quite closed off. But if people want to get in contact with me on those, I am very interactive with people that that are keen to talk about football. I could do this all over again, like we have done this afternoon, and I'd never get bored. So, more than happy for people to make contact, and I'm more than happy to lend a hand wherever I can.
Excellent.
Well, there you have it, guys. Another episode of the Coaches Network podcast, where our aim is to bring the world of athlete, talent, and personal development together to just one platform. And you can help us with that mission right now by sharing this episode or any of your favorite episodes with everyone that you can think of. You can tag us in those mentions as well on Instagram at The Coaches Network or on Twitter at The Coaches Net. We look forward to hearing from you. Let us know what you thought about today's episode. And until next time, guys, take care.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99-cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.